Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHV. So, no Border Patrol blitz today because Kansas and Kansas State are off bye week. And one team that perhaps wishes it was a bye week last week, well, I know they wish that was a bye week, the Missouri Tigers, after they were pummeled by Tennessee, giving up over 450 yards on the ground. And so because of that and because Mizzou is playing against North Texas tomorrow, we get to spend a little more time with our man Gabe DeArmon from PowerMizzou.com.
Missouri!
Gabe, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. It was it was kind of a bye week last week, wasn't it?
And away we go.
So, oh, boy, I was looking forward to this conversation all day.
Yeah, Nate's been giddy about this. So,
no.
This is, okay, and this is not a smart-ass question. This is a real question I have to ask you. Because this is, okay. It's a real conversation that I had with a couple of my Mizzou friends. So I think that's the worst first quarter that I've ever seen from Mizzou football in my life. And then the debate, was this the worst performance? Where does it rank amongst the worst performances, at least defensively or whatever? And so you're a man that has seen many a Mizzou football game. Where does that rank as far as just awful performances from either a defense or a team or however you want to categorize it?
Yeah, I can't break it down to quarters. I remember one really bad. I think it was the 2008 game maybe at Texas where like Missouri just got hammered on the first play and got beat like 51-10. So that would be up there as far as an individual quarter goes. But I mean, that game's up there with, you know, I remember the Norman Conquest in 86. I remember the one I always point to is I think it was 93 when Missouri was on TV, and they were never on TV, and I was pretty excited they were on TV against Texas A&M, and that was 73-0, and that had the dual effect of the only game being on TV being a complete waste and convincing the Kansas City Chiefs that Greg Hill was going to be a really good NFL running back, so that one's always kind of stuck with me. But this was up there because, like, this Missouri team is supposed to be better than, you know, Missouri was in those days. And this Tennessee team is not 1986 Oklahoma or 93 A&M or the K-State team that beat them 66-0. I think that was in 99. I mean, it's in the conversation. I think trying to rank things like this is just like a masochistic exercise, but it's in the class picture.
So I was talking to a Missouri fan yesterday, asking them what they thought went wrong, and one of the things they said to me was,
"How long did that last?"
It was a decent conversation, but one of the things they said was, "Barry Odom left the cupboard bare on defense." Is that fair to say?
I mean, there's something to it, right? There's not a ton of talent. We've said all year there's not high level SEC talent on this team, and they did lose their probably four best defensive players off last year. But I've seen these guys play better than that. That is not explainable simply by talent. I mean, Tennessee is not that much more talented than Missouri. Maybe a little bit, but not like that. The most amazing stat out of last week, I went and looked, Tennessee averaged 3.86 yards per carry before contact. Which means had Tennessee and Missouri played one-hand touch, Tennessee could have simply handed the ball off on every play and never faced fourth down. The Barry Odom screwed up recruiting does not explain Saturday. It explains some of why this team is struggling and all that, but that is far too big a pass for Eli Drinkwitz and Steve Wilks.
Okay, so I know people had been wondering whether Steve Wilks was going to be the scapegoat. Instead, Eli Drinkwitz fires the defensive line coach.
Don't pick, guys.
I don't believe you, Dave. And so,
you're such a cynic.
So can you explain at least what you know about why that decision was made?
Well, I think a couple reasons. I mean, the defensive line has been really bad. That's not debatable, right? We've talked every week that more of the defensive line or the linebackers or the team, it's all of it. The defensive line was bad. So that is not an undeserved move, necessarily, that Drinkwitz made. But also, in sports, you guys know this, you fire from the bottom up, right? You fire the bullpen coach before you fire the pitching coach, and then you fire the pitching coach before you fire the manager. So Eli Drinkwitz started with probably the least major move he could make. It kind of hit a point where everybody said, well, something's got to happen. I mean, this is the second worst run defense in Missouri history. It gives up fewer yards per game than Missouri did in 1991, but it also faces 10 fewer carries a game, and it doesn't face Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Colorado at the peak of their wishbone power. So I think it's easy to argue this is the worst run defense in Missouri history at this point. And yeah, Jethro Franklin, I mean, look, he hadn't obviously been doing a good job, and we don't know. Maybe there was more going on than just, hey, his players aren't playing well. Maybe there was a disconnect in the building. Maybe they didn't like him. I don't know any of that, but it's not undeserved, but also I think it's important to remember if a head coach fires the coordinator, especially a head coach that's an offensive coordinator as well, if he fires the defensive coordinator, if that doesn't work, there's only one other place to look. And I'm not saying Eli Drinkwitz was going to be on the hot seat if that happened, but the day you fire Steve Wilks, then the spotlight immediately goes to, okay, the only next person to be fired is the head coach. You know, so whether that was a week later or 3 years later or whatever, when that move is made, if it is eventually made, then, you know, the heat is squarely on Drinkwitz at that point.
And so, look, Gary Barnett comes on the show every week. He's been coming on the show every week for several years. And long before Missouri hired Eli Drinkwitz, he has always maintained that the second year of a coach's you know, stint with a team, the second year is always the most difficult year. It's more difficult than the first year. It's more difficult than anything, and that's always a huge hump, a huge roadblock. Of course, there's exceptions to the rule, but he said that repeatedly. And so when I asked him about Eli Drinkwitz and these struggles, he just laughed. He goes, second year, you know, you've got a team that's half of one guy's players, half of the other. Some of the guys that gave you a shot maybe don't like. There's a number of reasons he's gone through, and it makes sense, and I always remind myself of that. But you wrote a very good column at PowerMizzou.com, and you kind of talked about, and look, you're not calling for anyone's job. You're not saying this isn't going to work. But a loss like this does signal like the end of the honeymoon. Like, okay.
Yes.
All right, now everyone's looking at you to see how you respond to this. The recruits, now they start to raise their eyebrows like, oh, boy, I don't know about all this. Tell me a little bit more about what you wrote about and what you think right now. Take the temperature of the fan base and how Mizzou might feel about Eli Drinkwitz after what happened on Saturday.
Well, Saturday marked the first day that Eli Drinkwitz has ever been criticized as the Missouri head coach. I mean, he has been the head coach here for 20 months, and he, according to the vast majority of fans, has never done anything wrong, right? His tweets are the best. He overachieved in year one. The positives are all in his column, and the negatives are all in Barry Odom's column. That's the way it goes with most head coaches, but it has gone that way even more so with Drinkwitz at Missouri because he is very good at PR and very good at, you know, kind of putting his message out there and all that. So he has received virtually no criticism for the first 20 months, and Saturday changes that. This was his defensive line coach he fired. This was his defensive coordinator that he handpicked. And by the way, he fired Brick Haley to hire Jethro Franklin. He, I believe, kind of pushed Ryan Walters out to hire Steve Wilks. These are now his guys. And, you know, this is his team. I understand he didn't recruit them all, but I can't remember what coach it was that I saw a quote from last year that he said, look, the second you take over, that's your team and these are your players. You may not have picked them all, but this is now on your record. You know, down the road, we don't get to give Barry Odom. I mean, if you're blaming Barry Odom for this, then you give Barry Odom credit for the LSU and Arkansas wins last year, and nobody's doing that, you know? This is kind of the next phase for Drinkwitz of we've moved past, you know, we love you every day and everything you do is perfect to, okay, now you're actually going to kind of have to prove to us that you know what you're doing here. And, you know, the second year thing that Gary Barnett said, I think a lot of people have seen that happen over the years. And the comp I made on Monday morning was Jeff Fromm at Purdue. He had a very similar first season to Drinkwitz at Missouri. He came in and Purdue was worse when he took over than Missouri was when Drinkwitz took over. And Purdue went from 2 wins to 7 wins, which included absolutely embarrassing Missouri here in Columbia. And I talked to somebody in advance of Missouri going up and playing Purdue the following year, and Purdue was struggling a little bit. And that person said, you know, if the results had been reversed, if Brahm had just gone like 3-9 in his first year, which was still a little bit of an improvement, and then year two he was 7-6, everybody would have said, oh, man, this guy's doing a great job. But because he went 7-6 in the first year and then took a little bit of a step back to 6-7 in the second year, everybody started saying, well, I don't know if it's going the right direction. That wasn't necessarily fair, although, you know, hey, Purdue has taken a step back each of the last two seasons. But everybody just gets so out in front of themselves and so fired up about the new guy in year one that you kind of set these unrealistic expectations. And I know we've talked about it. You know, all these same people who are saying, well, it's clear Barry Odom left no talent. A month and a half ago, they were picking this team to win 8 and 9 games. It can't be both, guys. I mean, it can't be both of those things. And, you know, I think a lot of people also kind of forget Odom was 4 games over 500 in his last 3 years. He wasn't great. I'm not even saying they made a mistake hiring him. But Drinkwitz did not take over a dumpster fire. I mean, it was, you know, Odom's record over 4 years was pretty much exactly what Drinkwitz's is in his first year and a half.
Hey, look, I don't know if firing Odom was the right move or not, Gabe, but I remember, look, I come from the perspective of, you don't want to be, obviously, what Kansas has been in any way, shape, or form over the last 10 years. And the biggest part about that is they're firing their coach every other year. And they're firing their assistants every year between those every other years. So there's never a chance to develop any consistency. There's never a chance to develop a program. And I know that doesn't mean you just stick with a bad coach because you don't want to be in that cycle. But that's where, like, to me, I look at Missouri right now and I go, man, you don't want to slip into that cycle because it's
I said, Eli Drinkwitz, you don't fire him next year or the year after, and I don't think that's a conversation, but my point is he gets 5 years here to prove he can do this or not, and you don't have to look any further than Missouri for proof of this, right? From 1983, when they fired Warren Powers, to 1999 or 2000 when they hired Gary Pinkel, I mean, they were switching dudes out every 3, 4, 5 years. And nobody ever got traction because of it. And so Missouri didn't go to a bowl game between 83 and 97. And then you got to 2005 when Gary Pinkel was coming off that really bad 2004 season where things fell apart down the stretch. They ended up 5-6. I think they lost 5 games in a row. And make no mistake, Missouri fans were out for blood, especially when Pinkel started struggling in the 2005 season. And Mike Alton, it's the best move he ever made as Missouri's athletic director. Said, this is my guy, and he needs time to get it done, and we're going to give it to him. Think about where Missouri football is if they fire Gary Pinkel in 2005. I mean, 2007 through 2014 never happens. And God knows what happens, right? So the proof is right there in this program, and this doesn't even relate to Barry Odom. He had 4 years. Look, there was no buzz around the program. There was no excitement. I maintain as much, probably more than results on the field. Odom was fired because he didn't have a very good relationship with his boss by the end. And if he had even 50% of Eli Drinkwitz's PR skills, I think he's probably still the head coach here. But he didn't, and that wasn't his personality, and that's not his thing. And that's okay if you win big. But he didn't win big. He won some, you know. So you combine all those things. That's why he was fired. And I'm not saying that was a mistake. You can do that once. But you can't get back into a cycle of where you're doing it, like you said, every 3 or 4 years.
Would Pinkel have fired his defensive line coach after a performance like this?
Pinkel didn't fire people. I mean, his staff was his staff. And here's the thing about Gary Pinkel that I know is true, that I don't yet know is true of Eli Drinkwitz. We got so tired of Gary standing up there every Monday or Tuesday and saying, hey, this is my fault. I know how to fix it. I'm going to fix it. This is my job. You got tired of hearing him say that because he just said it every week. But he believed it, right? He believed that it was his responsibility, and that's why he made $2.5 million or whatever he made. He also believed that he knew how to fix it and that his system was going to work. And he stuck with it, and in the end it did. Drinkwitz is saying very similar things right now, right? Hey, this is all on me. I'm the head coach. This is my decision. It's my job to fix it. So now what we find out is, are those just words or does he truly believe that? And I don't mean that as an insult to Drinkwitz. We just don't know yet. And also, does he know how to fix it? And we'll find out both those things over the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years.
Well, tomorrow they do have a game against North Texas, and that's a game they absolutely have to win. And so now, imagine what the Tigers' lair at PowerMizzou.com might be if they lose that game, Gabe DeArmond.
Right. People in our business say all the time we don't root for results, we root for stories. I root for my own self-preservation and not having to moderate that message. So, you know, let's go see Missouri get a win.
That's right. Very high entertainment value at PowerMizzou.com over the past couple of weeks. But you're right, get a win. And so now, with adjusted expectations, what should Mizzou do? What do you think they will do between now and the end of the season?
I think they'll probably go about 3-3 and end up 5-7. Tomorrow should be a win. Vandy should be a win. South Carolina still, I think, should be a win, but it looks a little tougher. So basically, if they make a bowl game, it's going to come down to, can they find a way to beat Texas A&M or Arkansas? They got to beat, and I know people will say, well, they're never beating Arkansas. Well, you don't pick week 12 games in week 5, right? I mean, I've seen a couple of terrible Arkansas teams really push Missouri to kind of the last minute. And a terrible Missouri team in 2016 beat Brett Bielema's best team. So that can happen. Texas A&M hasn't blown anybody away. They could come in here and score 7 points, you know, the way their offense is on. So things can happen. But anything more than 6 wins is certainly unrealistic. I mean, look, let's just go ahead and not play that Georgia game, right? That's not going to be a thing worth watching. Florida's obviously going to be really difficult. But they are 0-3 in quote-unquote swing games. They need to now go, you know, 2-1 in swing games the rest of the way just to get to 6-6.
Okay, the final question. Somebody just tweeted me and told me to just ask you this, and we'll wrap it up. I guess the puzzling thing for me was not that they lost to Tennessee, because now, you know, at Kentucky, losing by 7, that's not an embarrassment. Kentucky's a good football team, and Mizzou was in it in the fourth quarter. I still don't know how good BC is, but they took them to overtime. And the two things you took away from those losses, hey, they were in difficult situations, they faced adversity, they responded pretty well, and they at least put themselves in a position where they could win the game. Didn't get it done, a play or two here or there, and they could have done it. They were right there. But then, against Tennessee, you're thinking, well, you know this team won't give up. You know this team won't fight. Yeah. But then it looked like there was give up and there wasn't fight. And so it just, I guess, what the hell happened? What happened?
What, I don't know what was different about Saturday than about the first two, but the important thing that you bring up is they had two losses before that against teams that are better than Tennessee that were tight games, right? And we get way too wildly emotional and just judge every team on their last game. I mean, I think we can all say, I wouldn't want anybody to judge me on my worst day of work, right? I mean, I've actually had people this week, I said, look, Missouri is not going to be that bad again. And they said, how can you believe that? I said, do you really think they're going to give up 458 yards and legitimately never get a defensive stop again? I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, they're not a good team, but they are not nearly as bad as they looked on Saturday. It was one of those just everything goes wrong and nobody has a way to fix it. And, hey, it was an awful day. But they're not – yes, if they go play that way eight or seven more times, they might win one more game, but they're not going to play that way seven more times.
Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
That is Gabe DeArmond, best in the business when it comes to covering Mizzou. PowerMizzou.com, back after this on WHB.